Welcome to the National Center for Science Education podcast. This podcast was recorded September 27th, 2005, referring to events of September 26, 2005, in the Kitzmiller et al. Versus Dover Area School District case, currently being tried in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. In this podcast, you'll hear Dr. Eugenie C. Scott and Nick Matsky of NCSE continuing their discussion of testimony from Ken Brown of Brown University, testifying for the plaintiffs.
The ID movement. Yeah,
and one additional related point there was that Ken was very clear. People are often confused. Is intelligent design testable and has been found wrong, or is intelligent design unfalsifiable or untestable and therefore not science? And Ken explained this very well and via pandas and other examples, which is that the ID movement has many arguments against evolution, and these arguments are testable because evolution is testable. So they're negative arguments, which are not arguments for intelligent design, they're arguments against evolution. Those arguments are testable, and in the example of irreducible complexity or the origin of information, for example, they've been shown to be wrong. In terms of positive arguments for intelligent design, there aren't really any. All there is this vague analogy and an inappropriate analogy between, for example, writing on the sand, John loves Mary, and the information in DNA. That's all they've got in terms of a positive argument. And it's not really an argument. It's much more of just sort of an emotional comparison. We could briefly talk about Ken's testimony about irreducible complexity.
Yeah, that was very interesting. He made a very interesting point, I think. He's kind of separating out the idea of irreducible complexity from the big idea of intelligent design in a way. Because he pointed out that the way that Behe carefully defines and specifically defines irreducible complexity in his book, Darwin's Black Box, means that it can be tested because of Ken's view that in that presentation of irreducible complexity, any precursor has to be non-functional. And of course, he's very well known, if you've gone to any of his talks, for showing how many systems, such as the immune system, a complement system also, do have component parts which are functional, doing something else, functional in another context, which simply means that the irreducible complexity concept is, it's not that it's unscientific, it's that it's just wrong, which is kind of interesting because he points out that the concept of intelligent design is ultimately not testable because it relies upon this interventionist transcendent force to do stuff. And your point is well taken. It really devolves then to the alleged evidence against evolution. But irreducible complexity, which kind of underlies a lot of the logic of intelligent design, is a flop scientifically. So you have an untestable idea that's based on something that's wrong.
Right.
So, you know, you don't. This is kind of thin. You don't have a lot of places you can go with this.
A few of the specific examples that Ken Miller addressed, he addressed the bacterial flagellum essentially by pointing to systems composed of subsets of the bacterial flagellum that have other parts. And if people search the web on these kinds of things, they'll see the various arguments about that. And he also, he noted the blood clotting system from pandas was one of Behe's examples. And he spent a fair bit of time on the immune system, which is not something that's been discussed in great detail, but essentially Ken reviewed much of the recent scientific literature on how the immune system evolved.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
And this was very interesting. I think, you know, it may have been a bit complex for the judge, but I think it was important for Ken to testify to show that Behe's claims about the scientific literature are not accurate, and that scientists, if they took Behe's advice and said that all Darwinian explanations for the immune system are doomed to frustration, which is something that Behe said in his book, if they had taken his advice in 1996, they would not have published numerous studies since then in Nature and other top journals about how the immune system evolved, including articles that were just published a month or two ago in top journals that we've just, you know, have just come out.
They wouldn't have asked the questions.
Yeah, they wouldn't
have
asked these questions.
They didn't have this idea. Yeah,
so, and just even in the most recent Nature that occurred last week in September 2005, another article came out on the evolution of the immune system. And Ken Miller cited that just to point that this is current research in top journals. That was in Nature, I believe.
I'll just make one more comment about something that I thought was very good about Miller's testimony. And that was, again, at the very end of the testimony, Vic Walsack brought this back to Dover. I mean, now what does all this have to do with Dover? And the policy. And Vic asked a question that a lot of reporters asked me, and maybe also asked you, Nick, after the feeding frenzy, which we'll talk about later. And that was that, what's the harm? It's just this, it's just this policy that all, I mean, that, you know, as Gillen said in his opening statement, well, they're just asking to read this policy to the students, you know, what's the harm to that? And Ken pointed out that, clearly the Dover Board of Education thinks it's pretty important. If it's so trivial, why do it? And I think that's something that we can certainly come back to. That took most of the day.
Mm-hmm. I should just mention Ken's sort of closing argument when he was asked, what's the big deal, by Vic Walsack? Mm-hmm. I thought when Ken Miller began to discuss his daughter, and if his daughter had been exposed to this policy, he would have thought.
That's a good idea.
That was quite impressive. And, some of the basic points were, why should the government be pushing a specific religious view in a public school? Why should students be misled about the up-to-date science, be left unprepared for future activities in science? And most importantly for Ken, I think, was the idea that intelligent design drives a wedge between people's scientific aspirations and their religious views. And he personally finds that offensive because it contradicts both his scientific instincts and his religious views. And he would be angry, he said, if, for example, his daughters had been turned off to science because of this kind of intelligent design view that says that you've either got to reject evolution and accept intelligent design, or you have to accept evolution and reject God. And so he found that in particular problematic. Ken was afterwards, he was cross-examined on Monday afternoon and Tuesday morning, but there was very little from that struck me as worth commenting on. It was a few clarifications and a few attempts to debate Ken on a few things from previous testimony. I didn't find any of it particularly sticking in my mind.
Yeah, well, it's Mr. Muse was cross-examining Ken. He's the same one who had deposed him, and he kept trying to kind of trip Ken up by comparing things that he'd written at time A versus time B, and is there a conflict here and all that, and none of it really seemed to stick very well.
No, I didn't.
Clearly, this lawyer was not going to go after Ken about, well, do you really mean the type 3 secretory mechanism or perhaps the type 4? I mean, we knew that wasn't going to happen.
Right. There was very little discussion. There was no challenge on the science, which we found significant.
There was a little whimpering about knockout genes, but he didn't go very far with that because, I don't think he knew enough about it to ask very much about it. I didn't feel that there was a whole lot of, of course, you have to remember that Ken told me that at one point in his life he was a college debater. So he kind of knows how to listen very carefully for what the question is and answer the question exactly as it is asked, which is not always the answer that the person questioning wishes to get. I think the part that kind of leaped out to me, which was an example of Muse thinking he had a gotcha, but Ken, I think, pulling it out to so that there wasn't any profit in it, so to speak. And this was in one of Ken's textbooks, the third edition of his Prentice Hall biology book that he wrote with Joe Levine, which is called the Elephant Book because the elephant is on the cover. The current version is the Dragonfly Book. But in the Elephant Book, which was 10 or plus years ago, apparently there exists a statement in there about evolution being undirected. And, of course, this is the sort of thing that Ken had talked against in his direct testimony, because, obviously, if you say evolution is undirected, you are making a statement that cannot be supported by science. That's more of a philosophical statement than anything else. And so those of us concerned about these issues will discourage the use of phrases like that, terms like that in that context. But there it is in Ken's book. Okay, so Muse zeroed in for the kill on that. But Ken explained that that phrase occurs only in the third edition. It does not occur in the first, second, or fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh edition, just in that one book. And basically, it was something that he didn't have anything to do with. His co-author put it in at a late stage of editing, and Ken didn't notice it. It got published. As soon as he noticed it, he and Joe had a serious conversation, and Joe's views changed after
this
the conversation.
Is Joe
Levine, his co-author.
Yes.
And in the very next edition of the book, it came out. And so that made Ken's views consistent about the use of terms like purposeless and undirected and so forth. And so basically, Muse didn't lay a glove on him. I mean, he tried, but he didn't get anywhere. Muse also tried to tar evolution with statements like Dawkins and Gould's and the Simpson quote, as we call it in our office, because we get it about every month or so in a letter to the editor that, you know, humans are... he used the term man, of course. Man is the result of a purposeless process that did not have him in mind. I mean, things like that. And, of course, Ken was just very, very consistent about just because a scientist said it doesn't make it scientific, and that scientists make statements outside of science, and that those statements made by indeed prominent scientists are not actually scientifically supported. So, again, he kept his consistency very well. I think the cross went extremely well. It went on and on. I suppose if I had a minute, I could tell you how long it went on. But
it continued into Tuesday morning.
It did indeed.
But I think we've probably hit the high points.
Enough
on that. And why don't we take a pause here?